Welcome to PCMC. I'm your host, Mike Bongiorno. I'm here once again with Vin Forte. Vin.
Hey.
How are you?
It is 2020.
You bet it is.
And we are feeling good in this new year of our Lord.
You fucking bet we are. Vin had a great idea, which is, since we're in the beginning of January still, let's talk about stuff we loved or found and...
Yeah,
or
got into last year.
Yeah, last year. It could be kind of like the obsessions part of a normal episode, but...
A full episode.
A full... Yeah, a whole thingy. So, fuck. What'd you like? What'd you do?
Oh, my God. Well, if we're going to go back and forth about it, I fell in love last year with learning about BASIC, which is... Some of the nerds in the crowd may know what I'm talking about.
It's a coding thing?
It's a programming language. It's one of the first programming languages. Mm. It was used primarily for Commodore computers.
Okay.
And at the beginning of the year, I downloaded a Commodore emulator to my computer and started teaching myself BASIC and getting...
yourself BASIC?
Yes, just as like a hobby.
Okay.
Just because it's fun. It gets you thinking about programming. And it gets you thinking about how computers work.
Wow.
It's a good way. It's one of those things where, like, if you don't really know how to program, if you want to, like, go back to where it all began, like, learn BASIC.
Wow.
The basics of it are pretty simple. And it gets your mind thinking about, again, how computers work, what principles to use. And it's not, and then that will sort of be a bridge and a stepping stone to learning how to do, you know, C++, JavaScript, you know, Python, Ruby, whatever kind of programming language you want to use.
Wow.
That sort of will get you thinking about, you know, how to take the next steps. And again, it's just a fun little hobby. And you could do, like, you could look up different programs to create in BASIC and how to, like, launch different video games, like a lot of C64 video games that you could download the files to and then, like, basically upload them to an emulated, like, C64 drive and then, like, load them through BASIC. And then I've been having fun playing a lot of, like, C64 games. There's a Doctor Who game that's bad.
Sure, of course.
That's fun. A lot of them are really interesting to play because the mechanics are interesting. Like, for a lot of games, to jump, you press up. So it's like you have to do these awkward, like, jumping over things instead of just, like, a smooth motion like you would with the A button. And just, like, looking into other, like, C64 programs and, like, early computing. Like, I've just really gotten into, like, early, like, late 70s, early 80s computing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm impressed. I can't do that. That's really cool, though. From a point of view of not knowing how to access it and not having that kind of brain, I am very interested in, like, that time of, like, computers. That sort of weird kind of renegade time.
Yeah, because, like, you really were forced to just sort of do everything on your own.
Yeah.
And, again, breaking it down to its basics, it really forces you to think about how computers work. Because a lot of people, I would say especially high school students, should learn the basics of coding. Because a lot of people see people coding and think, well, that's completely, like, unattainable to me. Like, how am I even going to, like, get to that level? And the dirty little secret is that at whatever level you're at, there's always going to be someone who can code better than you. And there's always going to be someone who's, like, not on your level.
Okay.
It's sort of like people who think they're good at Tetris. Where it's like, ah, I'm the fucking bomb at Tetris, dog. And then, like, you play someone and it's like, ah, well, I guess I wasn't that great at Tetris.
I guess I suck at Tetris.
I guess I suck at Tetris.
That's cool.
And honestly, like, because the basics of computing is, and someone told this to me that I worked at my last job, and they broke it down to the most simple way to explain it possible, which is when you put something on a computer, where does it live? And it's like, and I was like, well, what do you mean, where does it live? And they're like, where does it live? Like, you have a program. You need to get, like, these files onto this program. Where are those files coming from? And I'm like, well, it depends. And he's like, yeah, it depends. But, like, where are they coming from? I'm like, and I couldn't really answer him. And he was like, the basics of it are, you need to know if something's living on this server or if something's on this website, how do you take it and then move it to this program where it's going to work in conjunction with everything else that you're doing. So it's like you have information, and that information needs to live somewhere. So it's all about finding a place for that information to live, and then making sure it connects to something that will make it do what it's supposed to do, or connect it to where it needs to go. And once you, like, grasp that, like, it makes... Honestly, you can solve, like, a lot of like, minor problems on your own computer. Then you start thinking about, like, well, if this program doesn't work, what does it need for this? Like, what does this program need to run? Mm-hmm. And then you start thinking about, well, okay, if it needs these 10 things to run, like, which one of these 10 things is most likely broken or needs to be fixed? And if you can start narrowing it down from there until you get to, like, okay, it could be one of these two things. Can I replace one of them? Okay, let me take this. Let me delete this. Put this in here. And, like, it's just... And then it becomes, like, trial and error at that point.
Okay. That's very cool. Let me tell you about something I got into. And it's kind of a... How I put it? It's kind of an evolution, which is how things work in terms of... If you're interested and you have, you know, a mind where you're just sort of, like, you know, you nerd out on things. First, I played the game Bendy and the Ink Machine. Now, Bendy and the Ink Machine is a contemporary game, but it is about 1930s cartoons, and it's a horror game, and you're sort of trapped inside a cartoon animation studio, and it's actually done in a sort of 30s animation style. A lot of people compare it to Cuphead, even though Cuphead's a very different game, but both are homaging the same kind of animation.
Right.
So I got really into that game. I played it, I guess, over... I played it last year. I played it a couple times, and it, like, just the black and white of it, it got me super thinking about that stuff. So from that, I started thinking about 30s animation. So last year, February, Jen, who has been on the show, for her birthday, she wanted us to go to, there was a pop-up called Mickey, a True Original. And because she's a real Diz nerd, okay? She has a Disney Instagram that has a lot more followers than I have. So it was a pop-up for, last year was Mickey's 90th birthday. So it was a pop-up for that, but it was all art created inspired by Mickey. So it wasn't like Disney World. It was like, I mean, it was official Disney sanctioned, but it was art. Like, they even was like an old Keith Haring. There was some cool stuff. And it was all these different artists, some saying interesting things about capitalism and Mickey as an iconography of money. So it was really interesting that Disney kind of was like, yeah, like, let all these artists sort of imagine this iconic character this way. And we did that, but around that time, I just was getting into it. All this stuff was swirling in my head. They were coming out with a Mickey Mouse pop every week that was a new sort of like pop. So one that both me and Jen got, you could see it right there. He's the blue and sort of turquoise Mickey. Do you see him there?
Oh, yeah, right there.
Yeah, that is a really cool version of Mickey. And I just got super into the 30s. I learned more about animation. I read a book called The Animated Man, which is about the life of Walt Disney, written by Michael Barrier. And I learned some interesting things about Disney. Everyone thinks he's an anti-Semite, and there's really no evidence of that. One of the reasons people say that is because he was very much a Republican, and he was very anti-union. And when his artists tried to make a union, he really fought against them, and two of the union organizers were Jewish men. So I'm not here to say he was a great angel. He wasn't. But there's no evidence that he was anti-Semitic.
We're going to have to unfreeze him and find out.
Vin?
Ask him himself.
That's another thing. He's dead. I think he's cremated. Not frozen.
It's going to be hard to get all the pieces of his head back together if he's cremated.
He was a chain smoker. He cursed a lot. So I just got into it. I started watching. And also on YouTube, I got into a lot of stuff about animation. I learned about rubber hose animation. Do you know what that means?
Rubber hose animation. Is that like the Betty Boop style?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the early Mickey style.
Yeah.
Basically, rubber hose animation was the animation style of the 30s, and it's everything was kind of like a rubber pencil. Everything could kind of bend and move. Now, that gave way to squash and stretch animation, which is a much more realistic physics where it's kind of hard to explain. Go on YouTube and type in rubber hose versus squash and stretch, and it'll explain how these animation styles are different. But the rubber hose is what the early Mickeys are like and what Bendy and the Ink Machine is like. And it's that really weird stuff. And some of the early Mickeys are odd and, you know, weird shit happens in them. So I always liked animation, but I got more into a part of animation that I was never into before. And that's been a big part of this year. I'm going to Disney World soon.
What?
Yes, I am. And I'm just, I don't know. It's funny to say, like, I got into Disney as a thing because, one, it's the biggest media company in the history of the world.
Yeah.
So it's, what does it mean to say you got into Disney? Also, as somebody who's in his late 30s and, like, already went to school to learn about media and film, and I taught media and film for many years. But I got into Disney. I got into animation, that early 30s animation. And I always was like, ah, fuck Mickey. Who cares? He blah, blah. Now I love Mickey. But my favorite Mickey is 30s Mickey. That's the design.
Before he was corrupted.
Before, nah, he was always corrupted. But before, Mickey has changed various times. But there are kind of like three big Mickeys. The 30s Mickey with the moon eyes.
Yeah.
The 50s Mickey where he's got like pinkish skin and he looks way too human. I don't like him. He wears like a hat a lot, like a kind of straw hat. I don't like that Mickey. And then the Mickey of like the 90s. 30s
wearing
Mickey.
Basketball outfits. And
Looney
Tunes.
Yes. Right. He's Mickey wearing a Tweety Bird shirt.
I gotta look up this 1950s Mickey.
Yeah, it's he's too fleshy. It was a time where they went like very domestic with their cartoons, so it was a lot of like.
So like we're gonna dress him like a boy.
Yeah, it's my least favorite Mickey.
1950s Mickey. I'm not really getting a whole lot. Getting a lot of Mickey Mouse Club. Did I accidentally type in? No. Here's a poster that has all the Mickeys on it. I don't know. I'm not seeing.
Let me see if I can find it. Here. This is a perfect example of it.
Oh, okay, I see. I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah. He's like in the image I showed Vin, he's like got very human-like skin and he's wearing a red shirt.
He's dressed like a dad. Like,
yeah. No, thank you. And from that, I got into like watching like Yesterworld and a lot of YouTube stuff about the parks and got really into
all the dead bodies buried at the parks.
Absolutely. Got really into Haunted Mansion, which I can't wait to go on the Haunted Mansion.
Have you never been to Disney World?
I have, and okay. I went on the Haunted Mansion once, but when I go this time, I'm going to go on a lot of times. Because for many people, that's the best ride. It's a sort of quintessential dark ride. So that's one sort of through line of 2019 of shit that I was into.
Well, I will take you from 30s animation to 90s animation.
Ooh.
Because I got into, or back into rather, because I was always into them, but Mainframe Studios.
What do they do?
They did, and these are the two shows that I watched this year, Reboot.
Okay.
And Transformers Beast Wars.
So they were that early CG kind of thing.
Yeah. And you could see their evolution. Like, if you watch, because, like, Reboot came first, and Beast Wars came, like, near the middle end of Reboot, and then, like, the last season of Reboot came after Beast Wars. So it's like you could really see them, like, grow as an animation studio. Like, the first season of Reboot looks like, kind of looks like garbage. Like, it doesn't look great. It looks like very early CGI, like 90s CGI. But then, like, as the seasons go on, you see, like, there's better shading and, like, lighting effects. And, like, they really know how to, like, work with what they have.
Didn't the story get better?
the story got really good. I would venture to say that Reboot is one of the better kid shows of the 90s.
Wow.
Because they let their characters evolve.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the main characters, Enzo, is like a little kid in the first season.
Yeah.
And then, like, the main character, Bob, that he looks up to, who's sort of like an older brother figure,
yeah,
like, gets captured, like, in the middle of season two, and then, like, Enzo has to grow up, so he, like, searches for Bob, and when he comes back to the to the show, he's, like, an adult now, and he's like, and he, like, lost an eye, so he's wearing, like, an eye patch, and he's got, like, a beard. So, and, like, they keep him like that for, like, the rest of the series. And so, like, characters grow and they change.
Now, did that become a part of Toonami?
Yeah. And, like, early Toonami had Reboot, but it was originally on ABC.
Right. So it was originally kids, four kids.
It was originally four kids. It was broadcast on four kids in Canada.
Okay.
So it's a Canadian production. So it was on in Canada, and then they showed it on ABC.
Uh-huh.
And then Toonami picked up the syndication for it.
Uh-huh.
And, like, the last, I think, two seasons aired on Toonami. Because, like, the first couple seasons were in, like, 1994 and 5, uh-huh, I want to say, like, on ABC. And then there was, like, a long break. And then, like, season 3 happened in, like, 1998. And then, like, the last season, which is broken up into two halves, aired in, like, 2000 or 2001.
Wasn't there a recent one? Isn't there a Netflix one?
It's bad.
Oh, it's not good?
They basically, like, changed the whole format of it, where, like, there's some CGI in it, but it's about it's about live action teenagers.
Oh, okay.
Who can hack into computers and then, like, go into the computer world.
Uh-huh.
So already there's, like, limited CGI, cuz it's like we have most of the scenes take place in some Canadian high school. And then, like, none of the characters from Reboot appear at all except for the main villain, and then, like, some of the Reboot cast appears like in one episode. But, like, they're not done any justice.
Oh, okay.
So, they actually do an episode where it's kind of like a big fuck you to, like, Reboot fans.
Oh, really?
Because throughout Reboot, the original series, there was a whole running thing about, like, part of the fun of every episode of Reboot was it takes place inside a computer.
Uh-huh.
So, like, every once in a while, like, a big cube would come and, like, come over the town, and it would transform into a game. Because, like, that's, like, they're, like, oh, the user is, like, God
To them.
So it's, like, ah, the user is about to, like, load a game, like, ah. And, like, they would always have to win the game, otherwise, like, they would get deleted. So, whoa. Like, yeah, stakes are pretty fucking high. So, like, the game could be anything, which is, like, half the fun. So, like, a game could load up, and then all of a sudden, like, you're in, like, a Western. And then, like, they're playing the computer characters in this Western video game.
Uh-huh.
And then in the new series, they finally reveal that the user is some fucking nerdlinger in his mom's basement with, like, a bunch of Reboot memorabilia on the walls, who's, like, just this fucking slovenly asshole who's just, like, the prototypical guy in his mom's basement.
Oh, okay.
And it's, like, a big fuck you to Reboot fans. Like,
yeah,
oh,
it sounds like
insane.
A big fuck you to Reboot fans.
Yeah, I like that you're looking around at all your stuff on the walls while I'm saying that.
Oh, no. Well, what are you implying?
No, but they make this guy seem like a real shitty person.
Yeah. It's that's always a way to... Why say fuck you to your audience?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Mainframe did Beast Wars, which was another show that, like, had great evolution as the seasons went on.
Really?
Because all the Beast Transformers change. Like, they get different evolutions.
I was never into any Transformers. It was not a thing. It was not a thing of mine when I was a kid.
Me neither.
Oh, really?
Except for Beast Wars.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of people at first, like, old school Transformers fans were like, fuck Beast Wars, like, what is this?
Yeah.
But then, like, as they watched it and, like, as it grew, they were like, okay, this is actually really good. And they actually started bringing in more of, like, the lore of Transformers. But originally there was, like, a saying, I guess, like, on early message boards that I learned, people were, like, saying truck, not monkey.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like, we want them to turn into trucks, not animals. So, like, Truck Not Monkey would have been, like, a hashtag back then.
Oh, I thought that was a band that opened at Bonnaroo.
and like Megatron, like basically the Transformers land on a planet that you learn is Earth in like prehistoric times. And to like blend in, instead of turning into trucks and stuff, they turn into animals.
Okay.
So like Mega, so like Optimus Prime is Optimus Primal, and he's a big monkey.
All right.
And Megatron is like a big dinosaur.
So you got into this, you liked this as a kid.
I did.
Did you have any of the toys?
Oh, the toys were awesome. Oh,
okay.
The toys were great. And again, they had like different versions. So there was a version that they came out with later on called like Trans Metals. Where it's like they had like metallic forms and like bodies changed. I think McDonald's had a series of like smaller versions of them that were really cool. And yeah, it was just like really good.
Cool.
Like CGI at the time. Really good plots. They had one that they had like several plots that dealt with like certain characters like dying or like leaving.
Oh, wow.
So like fairly heavy stuff for like a kid's show.
Very cool. I gotta check it out. I've never watched any of that.
Yeah, you might really like Beast Wars. I could see you like really taking off on that.
All right. Well, let me give you another thing that I was really into. And this was a thing that it was a game and I played it and it was a long game, so it took 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. And I was kind of like, when I played it, I liked it, but I wasn't thrilled by it. But then as time went on, I missed the world of the game. Mm. And looking back now, I think it was my favorite game that I played of 2019. And I'm talking about Days Gone for PS4. Days Gone is a zombie game, which you're like, well, okay, seen that before plenty of times. But the style of it was great, and the story of it really was good. It was about this lead character. He was like in a motorcycle gang. And he had this wife that he loved, and he lost her in the zombie apocalypse. And in the game, you use your motorcycle to travel everywhere. So there's this really good motorcycle mechanic. But if your motorcycle gets fucked up, you have to get parts to fix it. You also have to get gas for it. So it's a game that you constantly, like, it's one of those games where, you know, it's not like there's endless shit. Like, you have to get everything you make, you have to find. And just the look of the world, it's very like a sort of Midwestern world. You know, you would go through like a house and you would see like a little girl's bedroom, but with like debris on the floor. And you know that somebody were living there. And it really was haunting. It really got the sort of the ennui of middle class life, but like, what if that turned into this dystopian nightmare? And for a game about zombies, it could be very, very quiet and very, very small. And but also it could be very loud. One of the cool things that the game did was hordes. And in the beginning of the game, when you see a horde, you just have to fucking run. There's literally nothing you can do. But as the game goes on and you get more and more weapons, but it's not Doom. You don't get crazy weapons.
Okay.
You get weapons, but then
you get like a gun.
Exactly. But they'll run out. You're able to like fight hordes. And some, you know, there are different ways to fight hordes. Eventually he makes napalm and you can fight the hordes that way, but it's still very difficult. Or another way that some people did, and this literally could take hours, is if you found the vantage point where the horde would stay with you and surround you but not get you, you can just pick them off one by one. And that could take hours. And I would have to turn it on mute and listen to a podcast because the sound of the horde was maddening. It was a haunting game. I think when it came out, it was very anticipated and it got okay-ish reviews. I think a lot of people wanted it to be something it wasn't. But looking back, I think it was a real narrative experience that I'm so glad I played, and it was such a good story and it was so engrossing, and you don't always get that.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of narrative games are like that's a style that's kind of coming back a little bit.
Yeah.
But it really harkens back to like a lot of PC games from the 90s or like early
90s. Yes.
Where it was sort of like the next evolution of like the text adventure games from the 80s.
Yes.
where, like, because I used to love growing up the Sierra and LucasArts games.
Yeah.
Where it was, like, point and click.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, like, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis is one of them. They had a couple of Indiana Jones ones. Maniac Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like, I like, you know, I think just like with a movie or a book, stakes are important. And I think if it is something like Doom, there's no stakes. Like, I love Doom, but yeah. Doom is very simple. It's just waves of bad guys, and the bad guys get stronger, and you get bigger guns. And Doom is just fun.
Yeah.
It's just, I played the most recent Doom game, and I loved it. It's just, you get a big fucking gun, the BFG, and it's just great. But with Days Gone, there would be long storylines of, like, oh, Vin cut himself, and his cut is, got fucking infected.
Yeah.
So I had to go get medicine for you, but it ends up not working, so they cut your hand off and now you're depressed. So I go on a side mission to get you a puppy because I think a puppy will make you feel better. I'm serious. But it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And there's also different camps with different people giving you jobs. So it really could be a different game experience based on where you go and what who you work for. You know, you can end up having better relationships based on your choices as a gamer. So it was I like that because, you know, when something's smaller, the stakes feel higher.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this guy is not trying to save the world. The world is fucked. There are these zombies and there's no...
Yeah, you're not trying to save
them. Right. He's trying to, like, take care of the people he cares about. And that's it.
Mm.
It's a very cool game.
I have to pick that up. But speaking of games.
Yes, please.
I would say one of my favorite games of the past year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I had to lump everything all together, I would say, like, the Nintendo Switch I've been just, like,
yeah,
loving this year. The Nintendo Switch has been hitting things out of the park left and right.
Mm.
But, like, Luigi's Mansion 3 has been so much fun.
Yeah, I want to play that.
Come on over and play it. It's great. Luigi's Mansion 3 has been so much fun. Even like a lot of the independent games on there. Games I've been going back to, like The Legend of Zelda, the new Legend of Zelda, Link's Awakening that came out this year that has like the cute little like claymation style.
Oh, cool.
But I would say the game I keep going back to that's just like fun to relax to is Super Mario Maker 2.
Okay.
Which I have not even made one level in that game yet. All I do is I log in and I look at like what the new popular hot levels are.
Oh, really?
That other people have made. And I just play,
and you
like,
play them.
I play them. And there's like whole modes where you can just like, you set what difficulty level you want to play.
Uh-huh.
And it just like, it gives you like 5 lives. And then you just like go through a gauntlet of levels until you die.
No, I've never played Mario Maker. Are the levels you make sort of like original game?
You have options.
Oh, okay.
You can make levels based on the original Mario Brothers style, Mario 3, Mario World, and like new Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they all have their own like special power ups and like new power ups that have been added just for this game.
Wow.
There's so much you can do. Like literally, the options are limitless.
So there was a bunch of movies this year that I loved. A lot of people didn't like this, but I love Stuber with Dave Bautista and Kumail Nanjiani, who's weirdly hot now. Right? What's up with that?
But I like that he came out and was like, the normal person cannot get this by. Like, this is Marvel, like, hiring a team of people to, like, watch everything I do and everything I
eat. Wait, he's going to be in Marvel? What's he going to do?
He's in, the fuck was it? The Eternals.
Okay.
I think it's like him, Angelina Jolie is going to be in that as well, so she's going to be in the Marvel Universe. Why am I blanking on her name? Salma Hayek.
Oh, okay.
Salma Hayek's going to be in that as well.
I want to be in a Marvel movie just to get in shape.
But yeah, he came out and was like, don't, like, look at me and think, like, you could do that. Like, this is them, like,
it's basically a full-time
hiring
job.
Someone to watch over me and give me, like, training.
Right. No, I think that's actually cool to say that. What else was great this year? Knives Out was great. My favorite movie of the year was Booksmart by Olivia Wilde. It's about two young really smart, woke, and I mean that in a good way, girls that are graduating high school and sort of separating or going different ways. It's really funny. I saw it a bunch of times in the theater. Yeah, what were you, you were bringing something else up.
I've been getting into a good YouTube series.
What YouTube series?
It's called What Happened, and it's basically a look at, like, movies and video games that were huge flops, or, like, ended up not coming out, or being disasters, and just backtracking and being like, what happened? They've done one on the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Okay.
I've done one, like, they just put out one today on Bomberman Act Zero, which was a Bomberman game that they put out with the launch of the Xbox 360, that, like, you know Bomberman, right? Like, little cute, cuddly thing. They made Bomberman, like, Gears of War style and, like, look really gritty. They basically gave Bomberman, like, a super gritty, like, reboot that, like, no one asked for. So it's, like, looks back at
that. What happened?
Yeah. By Matt McMuscles does that.
So let me ask you this. What didn't you like from 2019?
Ooh. What did I not like? Well, we just did a whole episode on Rise of Skywalker. Rise of
Skywalker.
What did I not like? I mean, I've been spending a lot of time trying to not, like, hate on things anymore.
That's good.
So it's like, I don't know. So if there's something I didn't like, I just, like, didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just didn't care enough to give it, like, the time of day.
I don't have, you know, great rage against things, but I was disappointed by some things this year. I was disappointed by Rise of Skywalker, as we said. I was disappointed by the Lion King remake. I wanted that to be good.
Toy Story 4,
yeah, I was disappointed by that.
I'm sure a lot of people, like, I've only touched it, but, like, Game of Thrones finale, I'm sure is going to be on a lot of people's list.
Yeah, I never watched it, but I've heard people were not fans of how it all wrapped up.
Yeah.
I tell you something that I liked is I really liked a graphic novel called Pumpkinheads. Mm. It's written by Rainbow Rowell, the YA author, and Faith Erin Hicks. It's a perfect read for Halloween. It is about two kids that work in a pumpkin patch, but it's almost like Disneyland. You see in the opening, the binding, like the first, like not the first page, but like the actual, like, inside of the book, looks like is a map of the actual park, which is good because they go around it, so you can actually refer back to it. And it's just if in October you're like me and you just want to get into the mood of fall and Halloween, it's a perfect read for that. You know, not a lot happens. It's a cute little story. But it's got beautiful fall imagery. Every page gets a little bit darker. You really see it go from daylight to nighttime in a very sort of, in a way that really is subtle. Mm. And it was a really cool book that I wasn't expecting all that much.
Yeah, Rainbow World is good.
Yeah.
I know what she's doing.
Yeah. What else? Oh, I read the book Lady from the Black Lagoon.
Mm.
About Millicent Patrick, the actress / Disney artist / monster maker for Universal Studios who got screwed out of credit. That was a really fun read. What about you? Did you read anything good this year?
I read, right earlier this year, so let me get the exact title. It's How Music Works by David Byrne of the Talking Heads.
Ooh.
And it was basically like, almost like if he taught a course on music and, like, this was his textbook.
Wow, really?
And it was very interesting because if you read reviews of it, a lot of people will chide him, I think wrongfully so, because he really, like, glosses over classical music and kind of tells you flat out, like, you don't need to listen to Beethoven. Like, don't get bogged down in that shit. And I kind of see where he's coming from because, like, the Talking Heads have always felt, like, very, like, fresh.
Mm.
Like, even today, you could listen to the Talking Heads and, like, they're classic for a reason because, like, they sound, like, very, like, very few things, like, sound like the Talking Heads.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I see exactly where he's coming from, where it's, like, you could study that stuff and probably end up doing something very derivative, Or, like, you could do your own thing and, like, try and hit on something that, like, no one else is doing.
Yeah.
And that really resonates with me because when I was in college, I met a lot of people who studied music. But there are one of the things I don't like is a lot of music majors. And, yeah, who the fuck am I? I'm not a music major. But, like, a lot of music majors are big Beatles fans.
Yeah.
Which, that's not my problem. Beatles are fine. I like the Beatles. But for all of their talk of being, like, Beatles fans and all, the Beatles were so revolutionary and, like, look what they did. They got so weird and that's awesome. If you talk to those same people about, like, Animal Collective or, like, any sort of fringe, like, indie artist that, like, is clearly influenced by the Beatles and the Beach Boys, but, like, to a radical extent where they're, like, really out there. They're, like, very turned off. As if, like, the stuff you're throwing out at them is so foreign. Like, they like staying in their little bubble of, like, the farthest out into the universe I'll go is, like, the Beatles experimenting in 1968. And so,
you think
I totally
this book would be good for them?
I think this book would be good for anyone, but that part of the book, like, the main crux of the book resonates with me because I see a lot of those people, and those people who I went to college with make very boring music and have continued to make very boring, safe music. They're into the Beatles, they're into experimental Beatles, but then they're also only into, like, what's on the classic rock station.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going out and looking for their own stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think David Byrne's, like, kind of got the right idea, where it's like, you should go out and, like, find something weird. Like, go out in the middle of the night and just, like, look for something creepy and weird.
Okay.
And, like, follow it.
Go out in the middle of the night, look for something creepy and weird.
Yeah, because you gotta freak yourself out every once in a while.
I love it.
Like, that's another thing he brings up in the book, is that, like, it's not just about challenging yourself, it's about, like, kind of shaking yourself a little bit and being like, well, I'm feeling a little too safe today. Like, what can I do to, like,
interesting,
get my music a little more, like, zazzed up?
Interesting.
And he's all, if you ever want to meet David Byrne, just come to New York City and just wait for him to ride his bike around.
Really?
Oh, he's like a big cyclist. Like, he put out another book that's, like, just all about, like, cycling around New York City.
Really? I love it.
Yeah, he's, like, written columns for, I think, like, Village Voice or the New Yorker, where it's just all about, like, him talking about, like, cycling laws in New York City. But, yeah, people have tons of stories. Like, he's like a Bill Murray type, where, like, oh, I saw David Byrne ride his bike, and it's like, yeah, who hasn't? Like,
very cool.
And then I read a book on the history of the ABA, which was the American Basketball Association, which was made in the late 60s, basically to eventually force a merger with the NBA. And the ABA was highlighted by guys like Dr. J, Julius Erving, who, like, would play this very, like, flashy style of basketball. That's where, like, the dunk contest came in. And, like, because the NBA at the time was still, like, very, like, old school, like, rigid style of play. And then the ABA came along. It was, like, way more flashy, way more, like, from the streets. And then once they, like, merged in the late 70s, like, that's when the NBA, like, really, like, kind of took off.
Oh, okay.
And there's also, like, the story behind it involves a lot of, like, drugs and, like, and crazy behind-the-scenes shenanigans.
Something I read this year, which I never would have thought I'd ever read it or even recommend it, because it always seemed like a joke to me, but it ended up being as eye-opening as people say it was, is I read Who Moved My Cheese.
Oh!
Who Moved My Cheese, which is a classic self-help book, and it's gotten very mixed in with corporate culture, which is why I think a lot of people resist it.
Yeah.
But it's not written for that. It's written just for anybody who your life has changed, and how do you deal with that change?
Yeah.
And it really is a great book. It really helped me, you know, think differently about when change happens and, you know, what do you do? Do you go out and fucking do something different? You know, it's this fictional little allegory of there's these little, you know, people, and Oh no, it's these little mice, and they go to this. They're in a maze, and they know where the cheese is. So every day they go to that place, but then one day the cheese isn't there. And one of the mice just fucking is like, I'm going to go every day to this place and one day the cheese will come back. And he kind of wastes his life. And then yeah. The other mouse, as scary as it is, like puts on his little mouse sneakers and like goes out and goes into the maze to find new cheese. And sometimes he's hungry because he's been running and he's not finding anything. Sometimes he hits the wall and it hurts. But eventually he finds cheese and he knows the cheese isn't always going to be here. But yeah. It's here right now, and when the cheese moves, I've got to go out and find it.
Yeah.
It's a short little read, but I swear it really is eye-opening. You know, I love self-help.
But so many self-help books are like chicken soup for the soul, like...
Yes, but then there's cool ones. There's good ones. Or, you know, like I read a self-help book where it's part self-help, part memoir, and it's by Chris Gethard. It's called Lose Well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about fucking up and losing and how that's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
But lose well and how to lose and then what to do. And it's a funny, entertaining book, but you know, I think self-help, no one should pick up a self-help book and dedicate their life to it.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it gets you thinking about your interior being. And I think you should read a lot of it and read a lot of different stuff of it if it's what you're into, and take it all with a grain of salt. And if you can glean one little interesting nugget from it, cool. Like, it will, you know, it'll help you. Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever read self-help?
Not really, to be honest. Like, if I've found self-help stuff, it's probably been online. Like, I've never, like, picked up a self-help book. Because, again, a lot of them are, like, very, not obvious, but they try and... There's, like, a trope to self-help books. And you're right, a lot of them feel very corporate, where it's, like, how to succeed
in business. Better ones and worse ones. Like, those ones suck. Like,
yeah.
The ones that are, like, 5-minute abs or whatever. Like,
yeah, or, like, learn to get ahead in friends and business or whatever.
Yeah, like, right now I'm reading one called Unfuck Your Intimacy, which is just about, like, get to know yourself... Get to understand what sex is, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll be a better partner.
Right.
And there's some interesting shit in it. Like, right off the bat, like, she's like, there's no such thing as perfect sex. Like, the sex you see in movies does not happen.
Right.
Even if you love the person, you have to feel you got to feel each other out.
Mm-hmm.
So don't feel bad if you don't have the experiences you think you're supposed to have, because those aren't real.
Right.
So, like, just little shit like that is like a little nugget of wisdom that I'm like, all right, you know, that's cool. I get that.
Mm.
Yeah. I would say, you know what? I know for a while you had a job and then the place you were laid off because they went away.
Yeah.
And now you have another job. But I think in that interim, if you had read... Who Moved My Cheese? I think you would have got something out of it.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's one of the things I'm into.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot to be said for, like, when you're in a position where you have to hustle, that you should, like, at least put forth the effort to hustle.
Yeah.
Like I think, had I read that specific book, I think I would have came more at the same thing. But, like, I think I know now, because sometimes you have to go through...
Yeah.
You have to go through the motions. Like, when I was looking for work, I got a lot of work on the side.
Yeah.
Like, I got a lot of temporary work, which got me through to till when I got full-time work.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't just sitting around all day, like, not putting in the effort.
Yeah.
But through doing that, I also learned, like, how to refine my search, like, what to look for.
Yeah.
Like, what jobs you should be taking. Like, there's a lot of stuff that people don't know.
Yeah.
Because, like, either they've had the same job for a long time or they don't have a certain level of experience.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The amount of people I talk to where, like, I'll offer to, like, help them with their resume because they're like, oh, I want to look for a new job, or, like, I'm out of work. And they just, like, don't know where to begin. Mm. They're like, I don't have a resume. Like, what do I even put on it? Like, Some people just don't even, like, aren't even at that level.
Fucking looking for a job is fucking hard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2019. Look, if I had to describe pop culture in 2019, I could only do it in two words.
Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda.
There we go.
This is PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here with Vin Forte. Vin, you also know as one of the co-hosts of WrestleRap.
Yeah, you can check that out over at WrestleRap.com and on Twitter at WrestleRap. And you can follow me on Twitter.
And please buy a t-shirt. Vin. All right. This is PCMC. We end every episode by saying go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.